This is the Old Mole Variety Hour this morning. I am joined now by Mark Brenner and Victoria Saucedo. We are winging it this morning with a review of The Irishman. We've been chatting a little bit this morning before we talk live, but are we ready, folks?
Absolutely.
Good morning.
I think we are.
Good. I feel ready. We're not going to really go too far in trying to explain to everybody what The Irishman is, because we think most people might know it. I do want to say, we believe it's a mob movie and it's not a union movie, which doesn't mean we won't have critiques about it on that front. But The Irishman is Martin Scorsese's latest film, a kind of swan song to the mob movie, starring the regular crowd of Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci. What's that other guy's name?
Al Pacino.
Harvey Keitel, as
Pacino.
Usual.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel. And so let me start with you over here, Mark. Mark Brenner, you spent many, many years as a director of Labor Notes. You have been a labor guy for a long time. You're now at the Labor Center at the University of Oregon, which is why you're here joining us in studio, because you live in Portland now. So we're happy to have you here on our team. So as far as the Teamsters and this long history of speculation about the relationship between Teamsters and the mob and the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa, there's something inside there that is factual in terms of how the Teamsters operated and how it is that we kind of actually got to the point we are now, given that there's been more recent struggles and more concessions. And so can you talk just a little bit about the Teamsters and kind of put that piece of it on the table for us?
Sure. So I have to say, when we saw The Irishman, I was quite relieved that it was a pure mob movie and not really trying to be a commentary on the Teamsters Union of the 50s and 60s and 70s. Because what was really a through line in that movie that I think resonates with a lot of the way people interpret the labor history of that time is that whether it was in the military, whether it was from the mob, whether it was from the federal government, working class folks, their job was to take orders and follow them. And that's how they were supposed to get ahead. And what it really missed in the movie and what is missing from so much of that history is, you know, not the top-down direction that came from autocratic leaders like Jimmy Hoffa, but the bottom-up inspiration and creativity and excitement and organizing that was happening at the time of the film and the civil rights movement, but even within the labor movement. I mean, we saw an explosion of Teamster activism and activity not long after, I mean, both before and not long after Jimmy Hoffa's death throughout the 70s, because so many people were interested in charting their own course and defining their own, what their own expectations were of building and participating in a democratic organization. They were fighting to maintain the standards that were won from that earlier generation, the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, the standards that people so frequently associated with leaders like Jimmy Hoffa. And that was really, to me, the thing I left the theater thinking about was, oh, wow, I want somebody to make a film about that history of the Teamsters, because it's been really inspirational. And there's no place that you can see a better example of that than in an organization that was founded the same year that Hoffa disappeared, Teamsters for a Democratic Union, which is a 44-year-old reform effort inside of the Teamsters Union. And there you really see the best of what Teamster activism today is, trying to channel the power that workers in that industry, in the freight and trucking and logistics industry, still have.
Now, a reviewer on The Nation points out that each time a mob movie came out starring Robert De Niro, there was an impeachment in progress. So he describes The Godfather in 1972, Godfather again in 74, Nixon resigned, and then notably Bill Clinton and his shenanigans, that was the year The Casino was released. So I thought that was kind of an interesting fun fact, because here we are now with impeachment process in progress for President Trump, and we have The Irishman. And Victoria, did you have anything to add about this labor piece that struck you?
Well, for me, the labor piece that came out was really, again, the movie focused on working class people trying to make their way in the world, albeit cut in a roundabout way. But that's what I walked away from, you know, being working class family myself, being a union family myself. I saw, I was like, oh, okay, there are people out there that are just trying to go to work while the higher ups are busy doing their thing with all the money that you're making and all the dues that you're paying. Who knows what's happening? The corruption, yeah, that's totally going past your family because you're busy trying to survive, pay your bills, put your kids through school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's Frank Sheeran, and Mark, you read the book that the film is based on, I Hear You Paint Houses. He says at the beginning of the film, I had four daughters. How do you afford to keep your family afloat? And it, for his path, it became involvement in the mob. His history is very important because much of what happened, much of his contributions were not necessarily in the best interest of working people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have to make a public service announcement here for the general population. My greatest fear is that people are going to now, after The Irishman has been released, take I Heard You Paint Houses as the definitive book on Jimmy Hoffa's disappearance. And unfortunately, as many, many Teamster scholars and experts in the mob have documented, most of the big claims that Frank Sheeran makes, from running guns for the Bay of Pigs to killing Joey Gallo, a made guy of the five families in New York City, are pretty clearly fabrications and falsehoods. And I think that his role as trigger man in the Hoffa murder is similarly invented. It makes for great cinema. It is much less clear that it tells us the story of the Teamsters. But as you point out, I did want to say there's no doubt that infiltration of the Teamsters Union and other unions in this country in the 50s and 60s by organized crime was a real issue. And that's what's so unfortunate, that it stops short of talking about the sort of rank and file rebellion that took place in the union, because that is a lot of what spurred it on. Was workers who were like, we want to control our union. We don't want the mob, and we don't want autocrats like Hoffa or Fitzsimmons telling us what we are and are not going to do.
And the legacy of Hoffa lives on in, what's the son's name? Hoffa Jr.?
Hoffa Jr.
Hoffa Jr.
Hoffa Jr.
Let's just call him Hoffa Jr.
Hoffa Jr.
Yeah, he's now in his late 70s. He's been the president of the union for 20 years. He's never been a working Teamster. He makes $400,000 a year. And so it's an echo of the style of life and the sort of imperious rule of his father, but it's a very wealthy echo nonetheless. And unfortunately, under his watch, we've seen a lot of the standards that were built in the era of Hoffa Sr. Completely unraveled. But I think that we're hopeful that that's going to come to an end. Hoffa's not running again, and we expect those of us who are Teamster watchers are looking forward to seeing some change at the top of that union.
I want to move on to talk about the gender politics of the film. And there's actually two things I want to talk about. One has to do with race and the perception of Italians as white men in the minds of many reviewers. But let's table that for a second and talk about gender politics. Victoria, we've had these conversations many times about films, and this film has been critiqued, I think rightly so, on its representations of women and the force of women.
Absolutely.
However, we both agree that there are moments, there are kind of reclamation moments in the film that are important. Do you want to take that up?
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about the character that plays Buffalino's wife has this very calm, decisive moment. Joe Pesci comes home. He's covered in blood.
He's the current mob boss.
Correct.
Yes,
Russell
Buffalino.
He comes home spattered in blood. It's this really kind of slow, dark scene. And his wife doesn't even bat an eyelash. She doesn't ask him what he was doing. There's no yelp from her. She looks at him calmly and says, "Go get cleaned up. I'll take care of your clothes." She reminds him to take his shoes off so that he won't track blood in the house. And the calm way that she takes control of the situation, to care for her house was really fascinating to me. You know, and they could have fleshed her character out much more. She's mostly seen in the movie smoking.
Looking good.
Looking great in her in all of these beautiful outfits.
Royalty.
She's described as being, her family came over on the quote, quote, Italian Mayflower, which I love that line. You know, but of course, there's no doubt that many of the characters, if not all of the female characters, could have been fleshed out in a very real way. And there's sort of these shadows that are lingering for all the men, but there are these really powerful shadows nonetheless. Bufalino's wife, one and only one, unfortunately, of Frank Sheeran's daughters, really holds sway over him. The one that rejects him. The one that never speaks to him.
And in fact has been pointed out to never speak. In contrast to a character like Diane Keaton's character in Godfather and Godfather 2, which has been referenced as a powerful voice of kind of horror and resistance to this brutal and corrupt world.
But everyone has to remember, you know, her character, the person that she plays, she's an outsider to this Italian family. So she's pulled in. She's not one of them. So she doesn't understand the dynamics. She doesn't know what people do, that this is just what you do. Frank's family understands exactly what he does. His daughters know. His wife, both of his wives, knew exactly what he was doing, and they never questioned it.
Well, we could argue, though, that Frank, as the Irishman, they are outsiders, which puts them in a position of being able to have a certain lens, not one that's super developed.
I would say they are outsiders. They're not an Italian family, but especially in that time, I have to also remind people, you know, that close of an Irish family still identified as immigrants themselves, you know. And then Mark and I, we spoke about how Frank Sheeran was in the war. He spent that time in Italy. He was fluent in Italian. You know, and so that was one of the hooks that helped pull him in, you know. So, and it was that scene where he's speaking Italian is actually a really gorgeous scene. There's wine, there's bread, and they're just leaning close talking about, you know, all the conflict and the war and what you do. And Frank says, you do what you have to do. You let the prisoners dig their own grave. It's really an intense scene.
Yeah, and it's a war crime. Yeah. So his criminal background is pretty well established at that point, but those are acceptable war crimes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's been more female dialogue on this radio show right now than there was in the entire Irishman.
Exactly.
So quickly, with our last minute, I did want to mention, in kind of a little bit of a pushback on some of the critiques of the, you know, I get why people don't want to see more films about brutal white men, but we have to remember that Italians, however we think about that right now, white ethnics, et cetera, let's just place ourselves and say Italians were not white. And Jimmy Hoffa makes it very clear what position they hold in his mind over and over again with the insults and the routine jabs at them. That Italians were immigrants, and that Scorsese has made a career out of exploring what he understands to be America through that lens and through the mob movie. And in that way, as a person who loves mob movies for whatever reason, and has an Italian father and a union guy, I love them. So unfortunately, I got to wrap it up right now. Victoria Saucedo, thank you for being with us.
Thank
Mark
you.
Brenner, we're going to make you come in studio well more often now that you live in Oregon. Thanks
love
for
it.
Being here.
Thank you for having me.
The Old Mole, we're talking about The Irishman this morning.